everyone, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Leah M., recovered compulsive overeater, and your moderator this morning. Today is Sunday, November 17th, 2024. The share ID numbers for Friday, November 15th are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 21,918. That's 21918. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 21,919. That's 21919. This morning, A Vision for You presents Surviving the Trials and Low Spots Ahead. Let's face it, life has its challenges. Living life on life's terms means we will all experience certain trials and low spots. We are all faced with a myriad of challenges in life, physical, emotional, and spiritual. It comes in many forms: physical pain, emotional turmoil or trauma, disease or illness, persistent character defects, death in the family, and many more. And each demands special efforts to overcome and to dispel the fear and hopelessness it engenders. How can we learn to utilize the program of recovery to cope with different trials and low spots and become more skilled at facing them in the future? Can we build an armory of spiritual tools and support that we can use for almost any situation? The program of recovery and our higher power can provide us with the stability to be unruffled by the vicissitudes of life. We can automatically know how to handle any situation and enjoy a wonderful sense of inner peace most of the time. This type of deep serenity is the reward for dealing with life's numerous challenges and find new wellsprings of strength, new reservoirs of love, and new treasuries of faith. Joining us today to elaborate on this topic is Roz G., a recovered compulsive overeater from California. Roz is a dedicated member of Overeaters Anonymous, living in the 12 steps of recovery. And it's a pleasure, and with great gratitude, I welcome Roz to the line. Good morning, Roz.
Good morning, Leah. Let me just ask that question. May I be heard?
Indeed, yes.
Okay, great. Okay, everybody. Well, good morning. Yes, that was like the most beautiful introduction to this talk. It is like so relevant to what I'm going to talk about today. So my name is Roz G. I am a recovered compulsive overeater, and I reside in the city of Los Angeles. And I have been abstinent for 5.35 years, 64.24 months, 1,957 days, and 46,974 hours. And no, I'm not that smart. I got it from an app. So today, yes, my talk today is surviving the trials and the low spots ahead. I was going to make this talking about the blessings of bottoms, but it really didn't, I couldn't jive it very well with the thing I'm going to talk about, because a bottom is a bottom. And what I'm talking about today is about the low spots and the high spots, you know, in recovery. So I want to thank God for this opportunity to use the Big Book and to talk about how the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous has changed my life and gives me a way of life. The 12 steps are a way of life. And before I talk about the trials and the high spots and lows, I just want to say I have been blessed. I've been blessed with abstinence. I've been blessed with a clear mind. I've been blessed with good health. I've been blessed with a normal body size. I've been blessed with good family relations. I've been blessed with sponsors. I've been blessed with sponsees. I've been blessed with three adult children who are all productive members of society. And as a single parent for over 20 years, that's not always, that's not a good statistic. But because of the 12 steps, all the things I've learned through the step work, my kids are really, really healthy individuals. They all work, they go to school, and they're doing great. I'm blessed with good relationship with my parents. My parents are in their 80s, and you know, I've stayed mad at my father for many, many years, but I could talk about that later. But, you know, today I've learned that the grouch and the brainstorm are not for me, so. You know, I just learned to see what I have in common with him, which is gardening. I could talk about that a little bit later, too. I'm blessed with two goofy and unconditional loving Labradors. I'm blessed with meetings and the fellowship. So before I talk about the topic today, I need to qualify. So I came to OA in January of 2002. It was on a New Year's resolution, and I had had a horrible week before that. It was the week of Christmas, 2001. I was at my mother's house on Christmas, which we usually, you know, have one family gathering on that day, and it just happened to be my mother's house that day. And we always get gifts for each other. And my mother bought all of us gifts, and she got all sweaters for the girls. I have two sisters. There's three of us. I'm the middle girl, and of course, that comes with a lot of I'm telling you, middle kid syndrome. But my mother bought us all sweaters, and she bought my sisters colorful sweaters, and she bought me a black sweater. And instead of being grateful for even receiving a sweater, I was indignant and angry because she bought me a black sweater, because what does a black mean? Black means that it's slimming. And I took it all personal. And I really didn't say too much about it, but we just happened to get into the conversation of weight. And my youngest sister said to me, "Well, Roz, it looks to me as though you could stand to lose a few pounds." And on Christmas Day, after receiving a black sweater and eating a whole bunch of sugar, I got really pissed off and told her off. I cussed. And, you know, on Christmas Day, it's just so inappropriate. And my sister said, "I'll never say anything to you about your weight again." And so I really don't remember too much about the rest of that day. I know I ate a whole bunch of sugar chocolate chip cookies that day. I don't remember driving home. I was in a food blackout, I think. And the next morning, Christmas, like, you know, the day after Christmas, when people are, you know, at their home and they're maybe they're celebrating, or they're just opening their gifts, or, you know, I'm not just talking about one religion. I'm just saying from this, my experience. So, you know, people are, you know, enjoying their gifts. Kids are outside riding their new scooters or bikes. I got into my car and went to a Whole Food store. It's like this Whole Weedery that's this mama and papa health food store in my town, and went to go get flaxseed oil and wheat germ, which was my cocktail for a laxative, because I felt so terrible. I was hungover from eating so much sugar that day. It was a very low, low experience for me to be sitting in the parking lot at 7 a.m. waiting for the Whole Weedery to open so that I could get my laxative and get out all of the crap that I ate the day before. It was really crappy. And I felt really low that day. And New Year's was coming. And, of course, I always made New Year's resolutions to lose weight. It was like, I'm going to lose 50 pounds this year. And I wrote that on my list. And I never lost that 50 pounds. I never had any kind of action plan as to how I was going to lose it. I was just going to lose it. And I had been to Overeaters Anonymous a few years before that, because when I was pregnant with my daughter, my best friend is in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I asked her. I said, "Hey, I'll just say her name, Phyllis. Is there a program for people who eat too much?" And she said, "Yeah, there's this program called Overeaters Anonymous." And I went to an Overeaters Anonymous in this meeting in the San Fernando Valley. And I went to a meeting, and there was a bunch of thin people sitting in a large circle. And I have vague memories of being in that meeting, but I was like, forget this. I don't know what this, where's the diet? So I left. But yeah, I had a vague memory of that meeting. And I lived in American standardized poverty at this time. It was when I'm talking about the week off, the week of Christmas and the sweaters. And a neighbor, I lived in an apartment, and this neighbor upstairs had given me a computer. He could just see I needed something. And he gave me this old computer that was controlled by this old phone modem. And it like, I'm going to talk like how the computer, those old modems, very slow. And I was like, I wonder if I could find Overeaters Anonymous. And lo and behold, there was Overeaters Anonymous, and it said, "Welcome to Overeaters Anonymous. Welcome home." You know, that was so slow, but I'm God must have been in that modem and on that screen and showed me there was a meeting in my town down the street. And so the next week I went to that meeting, and there were three people in that meeting, and then a man walked in. And the man who walked in that meeting was the man who I know today, who is like kind of the head of the sober eating workshop that you'll find in the Los Angeles birthday party. He's still in Overeaters Anonymous, and he was in my very first meeting. And he showed me his driver's license from when he was really big. And he said, "This is what I used to look like." And he was so, you know, the people there were just so kind. I told them about the sweaters. They just looked at me, and they just, you know, shook their heads. There was no crosstalk in that meeting, and they shook their heads up and down. And I just felt like I was just like what it said, "Welcome to Overeaters Anonymous. Welcome home." They understood how I felt. They spoke the language of the heart. And I got my first sponsor. I don't think that day, but you know, that same group of people met in different meetings around the town. And I got my first sponsor. Now that was 22 years ago. And as I told you when I first started talking today, was that I've been absent for 5.35 years. So it took me 15 years to get abstinent. And I don't regret any of those meetings. I don't regret any of my time in Overeaters Anonymous. And I learned a lot of lessons about relapses, and I didn't know anything about entire abstinence. I went to meetings, and the big book was sitting on the literature table, but most of the meetings I went to, that big book was not opened. And it was mostly of going and talking about the week or reading from, you know, OA literature, which is fine, and there's a lot of good stuff. And people have sacrificed their time and given of themselves to write pieces in those literature, in those, you know, pieces of literature. So I'm not talking those literatures down, not one bit. But what was lacking in my recovery was the recipe, was the direct instructions that are given in this book. And I discovered I was at one of those meetings, and there was a lady there who had a big book in her hand, and she looked thin and she looked serene. And she talked about this big book meeting and how it was on, you know, you just need to find it. We're online. And I liked her. I liked her recovery. I was very attracted to her recovery. And so I called, I went online. I got a better computer by then. And I went online and I found Overeaters Anonymous. It was not Vision for You, but it was a big book study. And you know, they had some kind of email list. And next thing I know, this lady emailed me or called me, and she said, "Hi, you know, my name is Stacy, and I would like, would you like me to take you through the steps?" And I was like, "Well, yeah." And so this lady took me through the steps, and I went to these big book meetings, and then finally she said to me, "Well, you know, Harlan G says this and this and this," and I'm like, "You know, I've heard that name before," because I always saw him at the OA birthday party. And she said, "Oh yeah, there's this meeting called Vision for You." And next thing I know, I'm calling Vision for You at 4 o'clock in the morning. And I did, and I called, and man, the recovery that I heard out of those meetings was like nothing I had heard of before. And today I still, in fact, I wrote my notes on the power of the big book presented by A Vision for You. I had you know, they gave everybody some, like the steno pad. And I took my notes for today's talk on these, on this beautiful lightning rod of the power of the big book. So I went to the Vision for You meetings, and I got a sponsor. I was going to some to a therapy, and I broke my abstinence once again. And I was talking to my sponsor about what I had done. I had eaten a whole pizza after a therapy session. I was driving home eating this whole pizza, this cauliflower crust pizza, which I thought was a little bit better than the regular, but I ended up eating that anyway. And she said, "I'll take you through the steps." She had this, she's from Maine, and she had this Maine accent. And she said, "Bras, you're going to have to make friends with green vegetables." And that really hooked me in. I really loved that. And 5 years later, I remain abstinent. I eat a lot of wonderful green vegetables. How within, you know, am I doing that? Well, I did not understand that putting down the food and abstinence was only a beginning. I put down the food many times, but I didn't understand that it was only a beginning. The book says that, you know, that elimination of alcohol or food for us is only a beginning. And what I didn't realize, the reason that I up again, was because of the buildup of human emotions that we've heard about, you know, before. So I'd like to actually quote page 19. Where it says, "We feel that the elimination of drinking or eating is but a beginning. A much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs." And I got to tell you, the reasons I ate and picked up the food again was because of situations that happened in my home and in my occupation and in different affairs. And then it says on page 14, and this is kind of where this, I'm springing off of my talk today. Page 14 and 15, the bottom says, this is where Bill and Ebby are talking. "My friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating the steps, or these principles, sorry, I wrote steps there, these principles in all my affairs. Particularly, it was imperative, important, to work with others' sponsorship as he had worked with me. Faith without works was dead," he said. How appallingly true for the alcoholic compulsive overeater. For if the alcoholic compulsive overeater failed to enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. And I looked up the word certain on Google, because I don't look at dictionaries too much nowadays, and Google has a dictionary on it, and it said certain, for sure, established beyond a doubt. It, you know, abstinence for the compulsive overeater is a basis of living. It is a way of life, as some people talk, as some people say, whatever you want to call it. You know, the AWOL, some people call it an AWOL, but it is a way of life. And what does life present? Life presents highs and lows. And I don't know about you, but I can find a reason to eat in each situation. Heck yeah. I can eat when I'm high, on a high, meaning when life is good, the money's good, I've got a guy, I've got a boyfriend, or work situations are great, or I'm getting pats on the back. I can eat over that. And then I can eat in the lows too. You know, things are not so good, which I'm going to talk about in a few minutes. But I have to make a decision daily. I need to take a sip of my tea. Thank you. I have to make a daily decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. And without enlarging my spiritual life, without giving time to God every day, I will not survive these trials. So I have some definitions for you and me here. Certain, which I just talked about. Known, for sure. A trial. It's a test of performance. And low spot. So in my experience, and from many, many others' testimonies, I have heard this is where God is found, the low spots. I didn't come to Overeaters Anonymous on a high spot, on a high place. I came from a low spot that day, you know, when I felt so crappy about having to get a, you know, receive a black sweater instead of being grateful. I was resentful over that. But the Big Book also says, on page 55, and I'm going to read it because it's so beautiful. It says here on page 55, actually, we were fooling ourselves. Well, you know, the paragraph ahead, it talks about how God made things possible. But actually, we were fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. Deep down in a low place. A deep place. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, but in some form or another, it is there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup, just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. He was as much a fact as we were. We found the great reality where? Deep down within us. In the last analysis, it is only there that he may be found. It is so with us. And so I find that when I'm in a low place, that's where God is. God is deep down within every man and woman. And I just want to give you a fun fact, and I don't think this is an outside issue, but it is a fun fact. In the depths of the ocean, there is a fish called the deep sea angler fish. They're rarely found, but they live in the deepest parts of the ocean. But they have a bioluminescent light. And yeah, they're ugly. And deep spots and low spots in my life are ugly. But as within that deep sea anglerfish, there's light. And when I'm in a low spot, there is light. Don't raise your hand, as I say to my students, or unmute at this time, but may I ask you, is there any of you on this line or on this call now or on this recording, people listening later on, experiencing a certain trial or a low spot? I would like to say that the year of 2024 has had its highs, but mostly lows for me. I'd like to talk about Jim on page 35. I'm just going to read a little bit of that. Page 35 says, our first example is a friend we shall call Jim. This man has a charming wife and family. He inherited a lucrative automobile agency. He had a commendable World War record. He is a good salesman. Everybody likes him. He is an intelligent man.
normal so far as we can see, except for a nervous disposition. He did no drinking until he was 35, and a few years became so violent when intoxicated that he had to be committed. On leaving the asylum, he came to us and contact with us, and from what I've learned, that's Bob and Bill. We told him what we knew of alcoholism, Bill and Bob, and answered the answer we had found. He made a beginning. His family was reassembled. He began to work as a salesman for the business he had lost through drinking. All went well for a time, but he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. To his consternation, he found himself drunk half a dozen times in rapid succession. So I just wanted to bring up the fact that this man owned a, as from the Big Book says, a lucrative car agency. And he ended up having to be a salesman for that car agency because of drinking. And I just wanted to just kind of think, what has happened to me in kind of a relation to that? Well, I have a good education. And a lot of people like me, I have a very bubbly personality. I do tell it like it is. I involve myself in all kinds of things in life. And I have to say I'm a very well-liked person. And I'm not saying that out of ego. I'm just saying that because it's true, you know. I do have a bubbly personality. I do love to laugh. I love comedians. I love jokes. And I do have an education. I have a bachelor's degree. I have three AA degrees, not alcoholics degrees. I mean, AAs, you know, from college. I have a bachelor's, I have a master's, and yes, I have a doctorate degree. And I earned a leadership position on my job last 2 years. I had more responsibility, and I felt a degree of satisfaction. And last summer, once a year you have to interview for these positions that, in my employment, and I was not chosen for the leadership position. I lost it, not through drinking, but I'm just talking about how I lost something. I lost that position. I lost it to a person who has very little time there. And I felt this jealousy, this envy, this, what do you mean they hired a teacher with very little experience over me who has all these degrees and all this experience? I felt really low. I felt low because I lost that job. I felt low because I lost, with that job comes, you know, about, well, $1,400 a month. I lost that. I applied for another one where it's a leadership of teachers in the special education department. And everybody was telling me, Roz, you totally qualify for that job. You know, having a title of Dr. Godin and having respect in that area. And I did not get chosen for that job. They chose this lady who is her second year on the campus. I have 20 years on that campus, and she had two. And, you know, I went through a month of crying. And because I enlarge my spiritual life every day, and because I send a food plan to my sponsor every day, because I send a gratitude list to my sponsor every day, because of the 10-step process, I discovered that I was very resentful, very resentful. And as like Leah said in the beginning of when she did this introduction, I have nagging character defects, nagging ones that still cling to me, jealousy, envy, and self-pity. Those are the three ones that really plague me, really came up. But no, I didn't eat over it. But what does an abstinent life mean? Abstinence. And there's a little funny metaphor I'd like to to just bring into this part right now. And there's this movie called Die Hard, and it's with Bruce Willis. And Bruce Willis is at, you know, in this upper floor in this hotel, and he's got his gun out, and he's shooting at this guy, and he shoots him, and he kills him. And there's this police officer who's this donut eating and coffee drinking police officer that's you know, looking over the hotel grounds because there's this called 911 call. He's looking to see, he's like, I don't see any problem here. I'm going to go on. And Bruce Willis says, don't leave. And he throws the body out to the parking lot on top. And what is it? The body just falls on top of the police car. Boom. And he goes, welcome to the party, pal. And that's what an abstinent life means to me. It's like, oh, I'm feeling angry. Oh, I'm feeling sad. Oh, you mean the honeymoon's over? You mean I still lose out on job opportunities? Oh, I'm still single for over 20 years? And the guy that I liked at the dance studio has another girlfriend? Oh, the girl that got the job over me is bringing donuts to the office every day and cookies and crap and emails me and says, I need to see you about this line that you wrote in this IEP. Oh, welcome to the party, Roz. And I remember a long time ago, before I was really abstinent, but, you know, learning about the 10-step process, I was taking the steps and I had a step partner and I had a feeling and I was angry and I called her. I really didn't like it, but I did. And I said, I'm feeling angry. I don't like my aid. And she goes, welcome to the club. And you know, it's like, it doesn't matter how long I've been abstinent. It doesn't matter how much money I make. It doesn't matter what degrees I have. It doesn't matter how many people like me. What matters is that I live in this business called life. And there are certain trials and low spots ahead. And yes, I have feelings about it. So these 10 steps and talking to people who understand the language of the heart, understand how I feel. And yeah, sometimes my anger blocks me off from God, but I continue to write. I continue to take the actions. I know that one of our well-loved people says, this is not a program for people who want it. It's not a program for people who need it. It's a program for people who do it. So what do? I make phone calls. I tell my sponsor, I told my sponsor for a month, every night in my nightly review, were you resentful? Yes. Why? Because of this situation, because I didn't get this job, because I feel like I'm going to be single for the rest of my life, because of this, because of that. And what does it say on page 68 in the big book? I'm going to go ahead and open up that. And it says, well, instead of feeling all this fear and all this fear and anger, there's a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role he assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us, and humbly rely upon him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. Do you know your God-given role? At this point, my God-given role at work is to be at peace. The job that I was trying to get requires a lot of crap, paperwork, and people complaining. And God has really given me a classroom filled with peace. The students I have, I only have like 20 of them. I teach, you know, a few periods, but there's very few students in them. They're all very well behaved. It's very peaceful. It's very quiet. And I have a lot of time to think. I'm a sponsor of a club on my campus, and it's a spiritual club, and many kids come in that club for hope. It's a light. Remember the bottom where the anglerfish lights himself up? I'm the anglerfish. it's a light. Kids get to come in and talk about how they feel. It's a club approved campus. You know, it's not like I'm doing something that's not approved, and it's a gift. And so I have ceased fighting and striving. And I accept my role. Acceptance is the answer. Doesn't Dr. Alcoholic say that in that story? I don't think it's called Dr. Alcoholic. Acceptance is the answer. Isn't he say that? Acceptance is the answer to all of my problems today. So after a month of crying and bitching and moaning and sending my sponsor and telling her that I'm angry at this person, I have come to a place of acceptance. And I have come to see that my role right now in my job is to be quiet, is to be peaceful, is to be an open door for students who need something. Another low in my life is loneliness. It is a constant in my life, and so I learned through the 12 steps and to ask for help. And so I asked the person in my life about dating and how to do it. And it's an outside issue, so I'm going to really curb this by just saying that this person said to me, "Well, there's this dance studio in your town, in our town, and it will give you the opportunity to go out and meet people and talk to people." And I'm a person with body dysmorphia, and when you're dancing, you use your body a lot, and I felt absolutely in love with it. And so now I'm a regular attender of this dance studio, and I've done spotlights, and there were two dances where my partner had to pick me up. And can you imagine a person with body dysmorphia? Oh, and I've lost over 80 pounds over these years. And I said, "You're going to pick me up?" And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, you know, I've had weight problems." He said, "That doesn't matter to me. I've had many partners." And he said, "I've had many partners over the years of all different sizes. And part of my training is picking them up." And so I've done two dances where he's had to pick me up. I've done a few dances where I had to get into an outfit where it was modest, but, you know, it was not like a bag that I used to wear over my body, you know. it showed my figure. And today I'm a part of that dance studio, and I go dancing, and I've learned a lot of different moves, and I have a lot of fun with it, and it has given me a lot of joy. And so sometimes I do have to face body dysmorphia because there's mirrors all over the dance studio. But what's my role? Well, my role is to learn. A lot of people like me there. I'm one of the older people there. A lot of people in their 30s here. I turned 61 this year. And there are some other older people, but, you know, they love me. They love me because what the 12 steps has given me an honesty and the ability to face reality and to talk about what most people, you know, a lot of people don't want to talk about. And I'll just bring it up. And the kids, I call them the kids there, they love me. And when I'm not there, they will say to me, "Wait, why weren't you there? Or why weren't you here or there?" You know, I was on a dance team last season, and I didn't join a dance team this season because I needed to rest the 12 steps and just learning and, you know, daily reviews, nightly reviews. Looking at God, what God has for in my role in my life, it's taught me how to rest. So that's been another the low point was the loneliness, but the high point has been dancing and getting into a community of dancers in my community. Another one I'm going to bring to round up this talk is that while I was working on my doctorate degree, I had a very low point. My daughter left. I don't want to say ran away because she was, you know, over 18 years old. But she left. She was angry and ran away. She went to go live with her sponsor. And I felt so low. I felt more pain than the divorce. It was like a death. It was terrible. I felt so, so painful. I remember calling a person about it, and this person said to me, pray for God's will. And so I started gardening because writing the dissertation was really awful, sitting at a computer, a nice high-speed computer, and not the modem that I got when I was back in those days. And, you know, I found overeaters on the low modem computer. I was writing a dissertation, and I needed a break. And my father said to me, I was gardening. I was trying to plant strawberries here and there. My dad's a big time gardener. It's not his job, but he lives in Indiana where they, you know, it was just huge garden. And he gardened when I was a kid. Of course, I didn't appreciate it then. I wanted to go, you know, do other things. I didn't want to work on his garden, you know. But he said, well, this is a very sunny side in your backyard here. Why don't you start a garden? And I did. I started one raised bed, and I got to tell you, getting into that garden, watching the vegetables grow, being out in the sun was so beautiful. And one raised bed turned into two, turned into three. And then I was talking to my sponsor, the one that told me I was going to need to make friends with green vegetables. She said to me, why didn't you become a master gardener? You can meet guys there. And so I applied to become a master gardener in the county of Los Angeles. And what do you know? They accepted me. And so I have, and the word master gardener sounds prestigious and stuff, but, you know, it really is just, you know, taking classes and learning about soils and about irrigation and about earthworms and composting. It really is just that. And it's a volunteer job or volunteer position where I teach people how to garden. And I learn how to garden. And I've made so many friends. And I eat a lot of the vegetables that come out of my garden. And yesterday we were just, you know, I was just at a meeting. And, you know, friends I've made, I got to tell you, it's been great. So what is my role in life? Right now, my role in life is to be a sponsor, to be a sponsee. I'd like to also say that the sponsor I am sponsored. My sponsor has a sponsor, and I sponsor others on a daily basis. And that's, you know, one of my roles is to be a sponsor, to be sponsored. It is to be a teacher and to help kids and to be a parent. My kids are all, of course, as I said in the beginning of this talk, my kids are older, they're adults, but you know, parenting never ends. I just bought underwear and socks for my son day before yesterday because he was at my house. He doesn't live here anymore, but he took off his shoes and his socks were full of holes. And I'm a mother. I'm like, what are you, you know, what is this? So I went, you know, bought some socks for my son, but that's, I digress. I'm just saying it's to be a mother. It's to be a daughter. My mother's 85 or 86 years old. I get to visit my mother regularly. She lives near me. I go to church with her every week. I get to sit with her and to listen and to be with her. That's another role. Maybe this job would have taken up so much time that I wouldn't be able to save these ending years with my mother, my life with her, you know, time with her. I have these two beautiful dogs, and I get to spend a lot of time with them. I take them on walks twice a day. I go to the dog park. I have dog park friends. So I have gardening friends, dog park friends, dancing friends, and I have program friends. And I'm also dating again. And I have people in my life who are showing me how to do that because I lost a lot of skill in learning how to talk to people outside of program. And so I'm being very picky about that and very particular because my ticker's broken and I don't want to get into another messed up relationship. But I'm dating again and, that, you know, it's not easy. So I'd like to say that in these low spots, in the low spots of losing my job, the job that I wanted, losing some finances over that, losing my daughter who did come back home, of losing, I don't know what else. I'm not looking at the outline here, but I'm just saying that I lost a lot of things. But every time I was in a low spot, there was light. That's where God is found. God is found in the bottom of the hearts of man, according to the big book. God is found, there's light at the end of the tunnel. There's light in the low parts of the earth where these anglerfish reside. And there's light. And every time I faced the anger, every time I faced the fear, every time I faced the pain, there was light. Because when I go down to those places, and especially in the big book, what does it tell us to do? It tells us to remove our fear and ask God what he would have us be. And at once I commence to outgrow the fear. Do I have fears? Yes, every day. A commencement is a beginning. So, yes, every day I live with these character defects. But every day I have the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous to give me the direction to do what I need to do, to talk about it, to share with someone who speaks the language of the heart, to share about these feelings. And every time I do a 10th step, I bring God into the equation. And if I'm in that bottom place, there's the light, there's God. What do I need to do? Get out of myself and go help another compulsive overeater, or go talk to my 86-year-old mother, or go to a dance class, teach somebody how to plant something, or make an outreach call, or receive an outreach call. You know, I'm sure we all do. I'm sure we all get phone calls that say, hey, I really like what you shared the other day. Can you elaborate on that? That's being a light to someone. So I'm going to end this call by saying that for sure there's going to be trials and low spots ahead. There's also highs. There's also wonderful times. But I can eat over every single one of those things. So by incorporating each step into my life every day, by sponsoring others, by being sponsored, by sharing these things that are private that I really don't like to share, perhaps someone on this line can understand. And perhaps I was a light to somebody on this call today. I hope so. So I'm just going to say, I'm going to pass there. And thank you, Leah, for letting me share today. And thank you for listening to me today. I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Roz. Yes, you certainly were a light of hope and possibility this morning. What a beautiful presentation, so rich and profound, including some humorous moments. So thank you. Truly a gem for the archives. Thank you. Share ID for today's presentation, 21,920. For today's presentation. Roz's contact information will be given at the conclusion of this recording, so please stay tuned for that. We will now transition to a question and answer segment. You can pose a question to Roz by pressing star 1 to unmute. I need your name, including the first letter of your last name. Who would like to ask a question?
This is Terry Kay.
Terry Kay.
Judith S.P.
Judith.
Susan C.
Susan. Star 1 to unmute if you'd like to pose a question this morning.
Mary Lee R. in Oregon.
Okay. Excellent. Let's get started with this list. I've got Terry K, Judith SP, Susan C, and Mary Lee R. Let's get started with Terry K.
Thanks, Leah, for your service. This is Terry K in Tennessee. And thanks, Roz. In addition to having my mom's name, you do have a beautiful spirit, and you are very likable and humble at the same time. So my question is, you know, when working with someone in the big book on the steps and they hit a relapse and we start over, do we start over in a different way or go through and they do their fourth and fifth step as they had in the past? What's your experience with that, if you could share, please?
Okay. Usually if I have a sponsee that eats, I give them about two chances. I don't like to use the word chance, but that's for lack of a better term. I give them two chances to, put down the food again. And if they relapse, then there's something that I'm not conveying to them. There's something that within my guidance that's not matching with them, and I release them to another sponsor.
Do you have them work the fourth and fifth step like they did previously, or is there a shorthand version to it or a different version? That's my question.
Yes, we go through the steps again. We may summarize the steps. We may not do it as deeply as we did at first. We may summarize them, but yes, we do the fourth and fifth step again. Yes.
Thank you for your question, Terry K. Judith SP, your turn.
Hi, good morning. This is Judith SP in Maryland. Thank you, Leah, for your continuing service. And Roz, so appreciated your share today. Lots of enthusiasm, honesty. I'm not here to critique it, but that's just what I'm feeling now. My question is, what are the variety of ways that you increase self-love? I heard the word ugly related to the luminous fish and concern when your dance partner was going to lift you and, you know, the sense of, oh. So, but I heard also a lot of love and connection with God. How do you increase self-love so that the offering to others as well as trusting God's offering to you continues to grow? Thank you.
Okay. I remember making a phone call to a person, and I said to her, I'm getting lifted, and I'm wearing this outfit. And she said to me, Roz, you are God's kid, and you go in there as God's kid, and remember that you are loved by God. And so I had that attitude. Now, Judith, I still suffer with body dysmorphia. I do. It is one of those plaguing character defects. I don't even know if it's a character defect or not. But it's something that I have. I have body dysmorphia. I look in the mirror and look in one spot and I think, man, I don't like that. So, yes, I would have to say that self-love is something I need to work at, but I use I don't know if OA has this, but there's a bookmark in another program that tells us about what we can do for the day, and it's very loving. And so I can dress nicely. One of the things on that card says, I can dress nicely, dress becomingly, and take very good care of my hygiene and get, you know, haircuts regularly, dental checks regularly, doctor care checks regularly, change over in my wardrobe once in a while, becoming clothes. So those are acts of self-love, giving myself nice things to wear, making sure that, you know, that I'm taking care of myself. And I think that's important. So taking good care of my health, eating really a lot of vegetables like I talked about in my talk, which is, you know, it's very important. And I've heard people say, look in the mirror and tell yourself, I love you. I don't do that as often as I'd like, but sometimes I do that. And surrounding myself with things that I love. So, yeah, I was just, you know, I was just saying that, yeah, the anglerfish is not the most attractive fish, but, and I don't mean to sound petty, or I guess that's the word I want to use is petty, but taking good care of myself and remembering that I am God's kid. I hope that's sufficient.
Thank you, Judith SP. Good morning, Susan C. Your turn.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you, Leah, and thank you, Roz. I particularly enjoyed at the end, I enjoyed the whole talk, but I particularly enjoyed when you were talking about, I'm trying to find my mic, if you can hear me better. Okay, here it is. I particularly enjoyed when you were talking about the tough times, the low times, the dark times, and the light that kind of can shine through that. I don't know that that was your exact words, but that was the idea of it. And I loved when you talked about, and this is leading to a question, what God would have us be. And I wanted to ask, when the going gets rough, when your daughter left, though I'm delighted to hear she came back, but you know, when the going gets rough, how do you bring in, my tendency, unfortunately, is to go towards self-reliance in the darker times. And, you know, and the work for me is to move toward God and away from self, of course. But when you look at your distorted thinking, I guess we call it dishonesty, and your fears, when those crop up, might you give examples of perhaps some dishonest thoughts in relationships, dishonest beliefs when life gets hard, and how you, in your fourth or tenth step, do that turnaround, that transformation with the fears and the dishonest thinking.
Can I please
clear.
Say?
Thank you.
No, yes. Yeah. Lovingly said, what is the question?
Could you give some examples of dishonest thoughts and beliefs and fears and how you turn those around using the steps, the program? Is that clear?
Yes. They didn't hire me because I don't qualify. That is dishonest. I do qualify. I have so much experience, not only education, but everyday experience. I mean, I'm talking about my job right now, 20 years of it, over 20 years of experience with the job that I applied for. Lots of college education over that. And of course I qualify for it. But the dishonesty was they didn't hire me because I don't qualify. That's dishonest. I do qualify. I'm going to die being single. How do I know that? That's dishonest. I don't know that I'm going to die being single. I'm going to lose my abstinence because I'm pissed off over this certain situation and I'm going to die. That's dishonest. I'm gossiping with people at work. That's dishonest. I don't know how else to answer the question. Usually dishonesty are these false thoughts down the road, like fear, false evidence appearing real. I don't even know what's going to happen tomorrow. I have plans, but I don't know if tomorrow's going to come or not. So there's a lot of dishonesty about the lies that I tell myself. When they're lies.
I don't know why I didn't get the position. All I know is I didn't get it, and I have to accept it. So the dishonesty are usually the lies that I tell myself. And through the 10-step process and through a person who's on the other end of that phone who is unemotionally involved will tell me the truth. Did they really do that to you? No. They just chose somebody whom they thought would do a better job. And I felt like Fred. Like, I'm going back to subbing. Well, I don't sub full time, but I could ask to sub. Me? Dr. Godin? Getting asked to sub? That's just ego, and that's that's thinking that I'm better than. And really, I'm just a human being on this earth to just be of service. And that's not looking to see where God is in all of it. But the point was I asked for it, I didn't get it, and there's a reason. And so I need to move on. So I hope that answered your question. And I certainly identify with these people in the big book in different ways, but I identify. Next question.
Thank you, Susan C. Mary Lee R., your turn.
Oh, good morning. This is Mary Lee R. in Eugene, Oregon, in recovery just for today. Just about every question I could possibly think of has been answered. So how about telling me or sharing with us your conversations with your higher power?
Oh, okay. Well, recently I was asked to write a 3rd-step prayer. I've done that before. This is not the first time. But I was asked once again. And so every morning I say, Dear God, I'm out of ideas. I die to self. I offer my angry, self-pitying, envious self to you. Please relieve me of this bondage. I cannot serve you to the fullest like this. May I be a bright spot in people's lives and a witness of your power. Please give me the strength to do your will always. So recently I've been saying that to God every morning. And then, of course, you know, you can't go wrong with doing, what is it, page 86 or something like that, where you say, you know, God, I ask God to divorce my thinking from selfish, dishonest, and self-pity. God, please. Please divorce my thinking from self-pity, because that's a big one for me. Dishonest, the lies I tell myself, or self-seeking motives. I want to make more money. I want to do this. I want to do that. So I do that every day. And there are people on this line who can attest to that, because I send them my morning meditation lists of what I'm going to eat and do every day. So that's how I talk to God. And I don't really have a long prayer list of what I want anymore, because as Bill said, you know, I was supposed to, or somewhere, you know, we don't do this because we don't pray for ourselves. It didn't work. You can easily see why. You know, if we do pray for ourselves, make sure that we're praying so that other people will be helped. So my prayers really consist of, how can I be of service to my fellow man? Yeah, I want to go to Hawaii, but how can I be of service in that area? You know, so I talk to God every morning, but I use the big book on awakening to direct my prayers, which are very helpful. So I hope that's helpful.
Thanks. I'll join you in Hawaii.
Thank you, Mary Lee R., for your question. Who else would like to ask a question to our speaker, Roz? Star 1 to unmute. I need your name, including the first letter of your last name.
Laurel B.
Laurel.
Margaret Diane. E. Jordan.
Margaret.
Diane G, Canada.
Diane. Great opportunity to ask a question.
Jennifer W, Washington.
Jennifer W. Anyone else? Star one to unmute. Okay.
Sorry, Jen P from New Jersey.
Jen P. Excellent. Okay, we have Laurel B, Margaret D, Diane G, Jennifer W, and Jen P. Laurel, you're... Laurel B, star one time.
Illinois, thank you for your talk, Roz. Really appreciated it. I have a friend who's dying of cancer, my best friend, and I was just wondering how I could stay out of self-pity with that. I'm not sure how to stay out of self-pity, that's all.
Okay. The very first thing that when you asked that question that came to my mind is, how can I be of service to my friend? How can I be a light and be of service to my friend? Because death is imminent. We're all going to die someday. It doesn't matter how, but we are.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
I would just ask yourself and ask her or the people around her, what can I do to help in this situation?
Okay.
Can I bring a meal?
Okay.
Can I sit and talk? Can I bring a joke,
okay,
laughter, something,
yeah,
to cheer people up around you.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Laurel B. Margaret D. Margaret, star one to unmute.
Leah, where would we be without you? Hey, good morning. My question is really kind of simple. Have you ever experienced being surprised by God's presence? I mean, just like maybe you're driving down the road or whatever, and you have a spiritual connection out of the blue, or, you know, not doing anything, any specific ritual or whatever, but just literally been in awe of that connection with your higher power.
Yes.
And can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, at my age, my memory takes a little bit more time to kick in. So sometimes I'll be thinking about a person and then I'll see them. Or I'll be thinking about a person and they call. Or I'll be asking God to remove my self-pity, and I go to work and I see kids that are living their lives with cerebral palsy or some other birth complication where they live on a feeding tube for the rest of their life, or kids who have, you know, disabilities, where they have, traumatic brain injuries, and they come and deliver a newspaper to me every morning with a big smile on their face. Here's your paper. And they're so happy. And I'm angry because I didn't get this certain job or I didn't get the extra money. And this kid comes into my classroom who has a learning disability, who doesn't speak English very well. And I don't mean like because they don't speak English. I just mean the language. Like they kind of talk different because of their brain injury or their defect. I don't like to use the word defect. But they come into my classroom and deliver my paper every day with a big smile on their face. And they're so happy to give me that paper. Very humbling. And so I see God in those kids and their joy. And they're very happy the way they live. And it really humbles me. So those are bright spots of God to me on a daily basis. Or the other day I fell at the park. I go to the dog park every day. And I tripped and slid and fell from this little berry thing that comes from the tree. It fell on the ground, and I could not break the fall, and I face planted. 10 dogs came to me to just sit and lick my face and just be there. And the people at the park are you okay, Roz? You know, and my friend Dave helped me get up. But just the fact that all these dogs came to give me comfort, because I fell, I skinned my knee, I got a bruise, but these sweet dogs came over to comfort me. Beautiful God shot. So little things are God shots. I would not have seen that if I'm blocked off from the sunlight of the spirit, if I'm worried about money, if I'm worried about food, if I'm angry or self-pitying. I don't see that. But when I'm clear of, well, first of all, if I'm abstinent, and next, if I'm clear-minded and I've gotten rid of whatever's blocking me, I see these things. They are little, but they are big. I'll just answer like that. I hope that's helpful.
Thank you, Margaret D. Next up, Diane G., followed by Jennifer W.
Good morning. This is Diane G., a grateful, recovered, compulsive warrior from Canada. And Leah, thank you for your service. And Roz, thank you for your beautiful share and your sense of humor. You did mention when you didn't get the job you wanted, the character defects that came up. So my question to you is, what do you do when a certain character defect keeps on popping up? Every morning I do say the step-by-step prayer, but I can be out for coffee with friends, and then all of a sudden I'm participating in gossip again. And then when I come home, I'm just so disappointed in myself that I didn't have the strength to say, you know what? We shouldn't talk about this person because she isn't here. So I'm just wondering what you do when those nasty character defects keep popping up. Thank you.
I realize that I'm human. I'll never rise above the level of being a human being. And I laugh. I will gossip once again. I'm never going to not gossip again. I'm not proud of that, but I will. And so I use the tool of the nightly review where it says, were we dishonest? Yes, I gossiped. And I ask God forgiveness, and I ask God to help me not do it again. But my humanity takes over, and I gossip again. But I'd have to say that I don't gossip like as much as I used to. And I try to watch who I'm talking to. And, you know, I have old friends that I've known for many years, and I've developed a trust with them. So through just growing older, I've learned where, you know, how to keep my mouth shut. And for the most part, I don't gossip too much with people that I don't trust. But my humanity will always come through, and I will never rise be on this until I'm dead. And I'm living in a spirit body. That's my belief. And then I won't gossip anymore. At least I don't think so. So I just accept the fact that I'm human, and that's why I have this wonderful steps and these wonderful nightly reviews to look at to say, okay, yep, I did this, but hey, I did this instead, or I made a phone call, or I talked to somebody else, or I was of service in this area, and I look to see what I did that was right for that day. And that's the truth, because there's people on this line who know that I do that. So I'll just go ahead and pass there. Thank you.
Thank you, Diane G. Jennifer W., your turn. Then we'll hear from Jen P.
Do you mean Jennifer W. or no?
Yes, please go ahead with your question.
Okay. Thank you, Roz, and I just really appreciated how you started your share with all your blessings and gratitudes, and you've answered this. I also, it helps me learn when I hear people talk about, you know, real life examples and how you didn't get your way and how you kind of have worked through that. And you've answered this in other shares, but I just was going to ask how, you know, focusing on gratitude and has helped your recovery. And like you said, you know, your higher power maybe wanted you to not work as much and not be as stressed by not getting that job. And I just want to see if you could elaborate on that. Thanks.
If you could form that into a little bit more clear of a question for me, please. I'm sorry, but I didn't get it, the question. Yeah.
How does focusing on your blessings and what you have to be grateful for help your overall recovery?
Well, it shows me that God is at work in my life. God knows, my higher power, and God is not surprised when things don't go my way. I believe my God is all-knowing and is not surprised. But what do we hear? We hear people share God's answers are yes, no, I've got something better. You know, so I just have to trust that God knows and God has something better for me, and that the big book says that we are in this world to play the role he assigns. I did not approach this job with full of my ego. I approached it with prayer and asking people who I respect. I asked my pastor about it. I asked my mother about it. I asked people who are in the job in other, on other school sites who I've known for years about it. I asked, I sought an interview specialist and asked how to give a good interview. I asked for letters of recommendation. I did all of those things, and I did not get the job. And did God know it? Yes. So I need to focus on the fact that God knows that this job was not for me, and that I am grateful that I have abstinence, I have a healthy body, I have my, like I said in the beginning of the talk, I have my kids, I have my dogs, I have my parents, I have a lot of extra time to focus on sponsoring and helping other people. I just rotated out of being the chair of the Los Angeles Intergroup. That was a big service for me. And I believe that I was, you know, I was able to have leadership in another area of my life. God gave me leadership. It wasn't at my work, though. It was in the program. And I learned a lot about leadership in that capacity. It wasn't at work. It was in the program. So I have to look to see where God has me and the role that he wants me to, what role he has for me and how I'm playing it out. And if I sit there and be, you know, envious, jealous, self-pitying, I'm going to eat again. And the book says we will eat again. And if we eat, we die. And I want to live a long life. At least if God wants that for me, I want to live a long life. I want to have grandkids. I don't see any grandkids come along. Chuckle, chuckle. But I want to have grandkids. So I just have to focus on gratitude. And every day either I can find something to be grateful for, even if it's the sun rises. So I'll just say that. Thank you.
Thanks, Jennifer W. Our final question for the morning comes from Jen P.
Hi, Leah.
Jen.
Can I be heard? Okay.
Yes.
Good morning. Thank you, Roz. That was truly inspirational. And just thank you, thank you. Especially love. Welcome to the party. My question relates to early abstinence and the passions that you developed. It's clear that the byproduct of the work that you did in program has come the passion of dance, of gardening, of the other things that you mentioned. My question is, when you're looking at the very foundation of abstinence and understanding that that has to come, that is first, that's the foundation of everything, what did you find replaced the behaviors and the compulsive overeating early on when you were first starting to be abstinent and put the food down? What worked for you then? If you could share a couple of practical ideas. Thank you.
Well, in the early recovery, eating. Laugh, laugh. But now what worked was being of service, like making sure I'm at a meeting and that I take some kind of service position. Timer. You know, a lot of meetings, a timer doesn't have to have any kind of recovery requirement or abstinence time. Being a timer also gets you there and you're listening to everything because you got to, you know, you got a time, right? Or face-to-face meetings, same thing. Be the timer. Go to a face-to-face meeting. Give somebody a hug. Or if you're in some other kind of a organization within your community, serve in it. You know, I sing in the choir at my church, and singing songs that relate to my religious beliefs are very helpful because they get me out of thinking. YouTube meditations. Now, I guess that's an outside issue, but you know, there's things in the world, in the, you know, that have given us within our fingertips to help us look, you know, see things from another angle. And so the 10th step helps us to see things from another angle. But in early recovery, it was being at meetings and serving within those meetings. And whatever way I could serve, being the timer, namely one, and then being the greeter, or being a reader, reading the steps, reading the traditions, staying after and talking to someone, getting phone numbers. Those are big. They may seem like little things, but they're not. They're very big. So reaching out to others, getting out of isolation. Because when you put down the food, the feelings come. Welcome to the party, pal. That's my answer for that.
Thank you, Jen, for your question. Thank you to all who posed questions this morning. And Roz, it's been such a delight to spend time with you this morning. Thank you for your inspiring presentation, bringing a message of hope and possibility to all of us this morning. Thank you so very much. The share ID for today, 21,920. That's 21920. We're going to close now from a chapter entitled A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.